A guide is one who advises, who assists with travel through or to a destination in an unfamiliar area, who accompanies a tourist or sightseer to show points of interest and explain meaning or significance, or a person who forces someone or thing to move in a certain path. The spiritual is sometimes implied. Now, to have a guide who is described as filthy, whose expertise is relegated to parking lots, and you're getting a sense that irony is involved in the book Filthy Jerry's Guide to Parking Lots. Perception, particularly of the seedy side of life, of the rundown and underemployed, one could say of the beat, is the territory, and Graham Isaac seems to know it well. A Seattle poet, co-curator of the Claustrophobia reading series and the Five Alarms Greenwood Lit Crawl, Graham did graduate work at Swansea in Wales. He's the author of said book, published by Babel Salvage, and he's our guest. Graham, you grew up around here.
Yes, I grew up in Lake City neighborhood, which is in the north end of town, but there are ways in which it has a lot of similarities to the south end. just in terms of like when a lot of people in Seattle think about or talk about Seattle, they sort of think of an area between, I don't know, Ballard Fremont and Pioneer Square, and then everything else is sort of strange to them. Even sometimes if they live outside the city, what the things they come into it for are like your bumper shoots or whatnot, and then these other neighborhoods have a lot going for them but are more or less left to their own devices.
It's where the people live.
Yeah, it's where the people live.
I could tell there's an affinity with South King County, and there's references, at least one reference to South King County and copper gathering and what have you in the book, but I could tell that there was an affinity for the terrain, and now that I'm reminded that you grew up in Lake City, that makes total sense.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I like to write about place. I feel like I've always liked to write about place. I think that the way that a person reacts to the places that they're in can both say a lot about them and change a lot from person to person.
That's really interesting. And so here's one of the questions I had intended to ask you, maybe not so early in the interview, but here it goes. If you were asked for a paragraph for a feature called A Newcomer's Guide to Seattle's Lit Scene, what would it include?
Oh, my. So for like readings and events
So in other words, what's it like? What can one expect in the lit scene here? Not necessarily the places, the house, the Hugo House. I mean, we know about that. Elliott Bay, we know about that. But what about the character of that lit scene? A lot of people describe it as cliquish. Maybe that's a place to start.
It can be. I think most can be. I think what can be equally surprising is how well some people are able to break through the cliques. Like, I think the cliques exist. I think that people tend to find a style of writing or a style of performance or a style of event even that they prefer. And everyone sort of thinks, well, this is what I like. I wish more people were doing it. And I wish that everyone else weren't being so standoffish. And it always takes more than one person to sort of bridge those gaps. But I've seen them bridge before at events like the Breadline or events like the Cascadia Poetry Party, lots of people coming together and celebrating that there is so much going on. But it is very easy if you're a newcomer to find a corner of the lit scene and think that that's mainly what there is, and then either be disappointed or really excited, depending whether it's to your taste or not.
Are we all sons and daughters of Rettke or Hugo or Carolyn Kaiser or fill in the blank?
No. No.
You got an allusion to a Hugo poem. So, I mean, who are there pillars of the Seattle, you know, I mean, it's like as an American poet, as a North American poet, we're all children of Whitman, is what Ethelbert Miller told me in an interview, a situation like this. But in Seattle, maybe it's not so clear. How would you describe it?
I think that Rettke and Hugo and the like are pillars, but they're not the whole house, right? They're pillars, but they're not also the foundation and the roof. And I think honestly, and this this might be a weird one, but I think there's a fair amount of Carl Sandburg in the Northwest, at least amongst a lot of the male poets. And I think in some ways there was some Carl Sandburg in Hugo's work as well. But I think what you have is because so many people have moved here not from other countries, although there is that as well, but from other parts of the United States, the Northwest poetry landscape tends to involve a lot of taking ideas and schools of writing and adapting it to something that makes sense in the Northwest. I also think that the Northwest is an inspiring place, and so there are a lot of people who start writing or start painting or start playing music that don't have a lot of formal connection to it in terms of how much they've read or their education, and then they find their way into that as time goes on, hopefully at least.
Mm-hmm. That's my story. And one gets a sense then from your answer that the literary geography here is still to be shaped.
Oh, absolutely. I think we've got a lot of great places to start, but we've also got a lot of great places to go in an answer that I think sounds a lot like a coach. a coach of a losing team describing his optimism. I think that there are a lot of great writers who've come from the Northwest and a lot of great writers in the Northwest.
Go back to the losing team. I mean, go back deeper into that.
Okay, well,
I mean, you look at Portland, Gary Snyder, Lou Welch, Philip mm-hmm. Whalen, Leslie Scalapino. You look north to Vancouver, George Baring, Fred Waugh, Daphne Marlatt, the Tisch Group, Frank Davey, Seattle, Rettke, Hugo, Carolyn Kaiser. I mean, these are all fine poets. I don't mean to diminish their contribution, but they're not exactly innovators. It took Rettke, only a few years before his death before he discovered free verse, 50 years after it really came on the scene. So is that connected to that losing coach thing you were getting into?
Not really. I do think that it can be helpful for a town or a scene to compare itself to others to push itself, but I also kind of think that at least in the Northwest, we're all in this together. Like, I think that Portland informs Vancouver, informs Seattle, informs Spokane, informs Tacoma. I don't think that thinking of Seattle scene versus Portland scene, except for in like a novelty slam or something like that, I don't think it's really relevant. I don't even think that poets who compete for a living think it's relevant in a larger scale. Everyone is sort of feeding off each other. I think that one thing that people can forget about Seattle, because it is oftentimes talked about as one of the most liberal cities in America, et cetera, is that there's also a strong sort of classically conservative mindset that came over here. The city was founded half by drunken lager whoremongers and half by hardworking Scandinavian and Dutch Protestants who highly believed in the value of education and highly believed in the value of the arts, but weren't necessarily looking to... They weren't trying to fuck shit up with it, basically. They were into things that were classically beautiful and classically accomplished. And so I think you can see some of that in say, Rutke's work, where he was doing beautiful things with form. And I think that form is always going to have at least a toehold in the Pacific Northwest, because you have this deep and nowadays sort of underground strain of people who came here in that sort of second wave of Seattle settlers that were a lot of Midwesterners, a lot of people from Minneapolis and Chicago, and all valued education and the arts, but not in a subversive way, you know?
Sure, that makes sense.